Sanchez. Pogba, 2-2! In a flash, the scene has changed! Shades of red on this blue-blue day!
Nani. Ready!
Listeners, welcome to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. This one is a little bit different in format. We're going to be talking specifically about one subject, which is the prospect of Edwin van der Sar as Manchester United's next director of football. It's somebody who's been kind of an obvious rumor, and I'm here to discuss it with fellow Busby Babe writer Nathan Eichel. Nathan, how's it going?
Good. How you doing, Colin?
Pretty good. We're not going to talk too much about the Everton game that just happened, so I'm a little bit happy about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just to set the stage real quick and give everybody context, we are recording, what would you say, like 4 hours after the conclusion of a game that felt like it lasted probably 3 or 4 hours itself. Yeah, it definitely provided some perspective for this conversation.
Yeah, it's a time where, you know, people still a little bit optimistic about the future under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but we're definitely seeing some of the holes in the squad that are very, very, very wide open right now, particularly at defense. And some of the results of the misdoings of Ed Woodward in the past and why he would need a director of football. So perhaps a timely episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, as we were saying pre-show, since Sir Alex left, the one constant we've seen propel through bad signings, inappropriate hirings, and, you know, lackluster returns on investment is the fact that Ed Woodward is still calling the shots. And we've both talked at great length before Ollie's appointment, even as caretaker, let alone permanent manager, that a DOF needed to be brought in. United kind of put the cart before the horse a little bit and made Ollie the permanent manager. I think myself, as well as most of us, if not all of us at the Busby Babe, think it was still the right hire. But at least for me, I still believe a director of football should have been appointed first. So at the very least, that a director of football could have made the confirmation of, hey, you know, Ollie's my guy. Or he could have potentially even provided a different perspective looking at what transfers they wanted to bring in versus what, you know, was already in the cupboard at United. But now that's why we're looking at a guy like Edwin van der Sar, because we think that he would probably be the one guy who could swoop in and work with Ollie and probably still be a very effective director of football, even though he didn't get to pick his guy for manager.
Yeah, and I suppose a timely episode in a different sense as well, because the miraculous run of Ajax in the UEFA Champions League has continued this past week with Ajax stealing yet another win against Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting parallel because, you know, we were the team that rained on the party 2 years ago for Ajax when they were first starting to knock on that door in Europe, where it was like, hey, this Ajax team, they're pretty young. It's a lot of homegrown players, but they're looking like they've got some real generational talents for years to come. And it's something that's kind of remained a secret, too, because the Netherlands didn't play in the World Cup. So, you know, you've got a whole swath of, 20-somethings that nobody got to see play over the summer. And so they've kind of been a secret. And we squashed it a little bit in 2016 because we beat that team in the Europa League final. But they were the youngest team to ever play in a European final. And they've got two more years of seasoning. And now they're knocking out Real Madrid and Juventus. And they've got a real shot to potentially win the whole thing.
Yeah, it was one thing that crossed my mind when I saw them play a little bit in the first leg, but definitely the second leg against Juventus, was when they beat Real Madrid, I had it in the back of my mind that Real Madrid were also kind of on an off year, and they're definitely lacking both leadership and star talent. particularly replacing the 50 goals a season that Ronaldo provided for them. So it was a little bit understandable that Ajax were able to catch Real Madrid off guard. But here they come against Juventus, a team that has been either in the semifinals or the finals, I think, for the last 5 years, and really just loaded with European, you know, constant contenders at the European level. And Ajax go in there with full confidence and are able to get the job done. And I think that says a lot about the growth of the team, but also just their, you know, their pure talent that they already have, not to mention the potential that some of them have. I think Frankie de Jong has the potential to be one of the best midfielders of his generation. And Matthijs de Ligt, I'm not sure how you say his name yet, but if we see him in a United shirt, maybe I'll learn. But Matthijs de Ligt, you know, potential to be one of the best central defenders of his generation. We're seeing this kind of happen again from the Ajax Youth Academy, and it's something that's been overseen by Edwin van der Sar as the chief executive.
Yeah, and just looking back, when you pull up the old stats from that Europa League final, Frankie de Jong didn't even start that game. He was on the mm-hmm. bench. He did come in late, but at that point, Mkhitaryan, may he rest in peace. I miss him every day that I see Sanchez in a jersey. Because at least Mkhitaryan did play for us instead of, you know, not make the 18. But the, Frankie de Jong, he didn't even play. And now he's a record signing for Barcelona, you know, that team that knocked us out in the midweek very convincingly. And so you're just seeing right now this talent that's come out of Ajax. It's unbelievable. It's got that same look and flavor of that 2016 Monaco team that took the world by storm and then was picked to the bones by the rest of the world too, as they brought in huge sums of money for players like Kylian Mbappe. And we've certainly talked at length about that, but as we're looking at these defensive problems and we're seeing a potential generational talent coming out of Ajax in Matthijs de Ligt, it certainly would be who of us to, I don't know, bring in a guy like Edwin van der Sar who might be able to bridge that gap.
Yeah, definitely would have the personal connection with some of these players when it comes to the January or for the summer transfer window. And I guess this was one of the first things in my notes and was about Edwin van der Sar's job at Ajax. So I guess let's go into it a little bit deeper because this was kind of something he was a part of as a player at Ajax. When Louis van Gaal's team in the kind of early to mid-1990s was coming up, a lot of them were Ajax youth products that at a very young age accomplished more than what was expected of them, and they won the Champions League in 1995 with a side that featured Edwin van der Sar, Danny Blind, Frank de Boer, Edgar Davids, and Patrick Kluivert, amongst several others, Clarence Seedorf, one of the best midfielders of that generation. Something that Ajax has done before, now he's kind of overseeing again.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's kind of that same parallel where that Ajax generation that came up and took Europe by storm, it was going on at the same time that, you know, United its own class in 92 was coming into its own and starting to take over mm-hmm. the Premier League. And so van der Sar is going to be that guy that comes in and truly recognizes how important it is to develop that youth system. It's not all about just going out and splashing cash. I mean, you know, you can go get one or two Galacticos players to steal a Real Madrid phrase, but, you know, you still got to build the team around it. And so between his success with Ajax and then coming over to Manchester United eventually after stops at Juventus and Fulham, he's seen it all. He's been at, you know, three enormous clubs and Fulham. and so he's got a ton of Premier League experience. He's got a ton of European experience. Both as a player and now as an executive. And that's something that we can't afford, you know, not to have. And certainly those names that you listed off that Edwin van der Sar played, for the kids who don't go on the YouTubes, but maybe you play FIFA, you'll recognize a lot of those names on the icons list. That team was no joke, and the Netherlands was unbelievable back then, too.
Yeah, maybe some of the first times some of these kids see those names are in the FIFA Ultimate Team icons. So, you know, if you're lucky enough to get is there an Edgar Davids one? Or I think Dennis Bergkamp was even at Ajax at some point in the 90s, so there's that as well. Kind of going back to what we were saying, that's a little bit of a pro for Edwin van der Sar looking at this Manchester United job. is that his focus on youth and his focus on the development of players at Ajax is something he can definitely bring to Manchester United and have immediate effect because of Manchester United's vast resources and their major investment in their production of youth players. Something that has probably been more consistent than anything else at the club since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. They've produced some pretty good youth teams, and we've seen a lot of younger players come up and be able to break through the squad, albeit some of that may be the lack of quality from other transfers coming in, but I don't think anyone would say that, you know, Marcus Rashford has been lacking in quality. I think people would say he's on the cusp of being one of the better strikers in Europe.
Yeah, and once he figures he hits that last bar, he really will be incredible, and he'll be another testament to what Manchester United's been able to put together. And I think to a certain degree, and we saw it last summer, the United board got a little gun-shy on transfers, and Ed Woodward, you know, I think he's feeling a little bit of heat at this point because he splashed all that cash that they always say, £500 million in the last couple of years, and we haven't seen any results. To bring in Edwin van der Sar or another technical director or director of football, whatever you want to call it, that sees the value in a youth academy in the long run actually ends up saving the team a bunch of money. Because if you start developing homegrown players, you know, you only got to spend $100 million or something in a transfer window to bring in, like, that last piece you need because you've built your team, and you don't have to go spend $500 million to, you know, throw darts at the dartboard and hope that all these free agents come together and can learn to play, you know, together. It's the same thing that we see, you know, in American sports. Bunch of years ago, what was it, 2011? The Eagles had spent all that money in free agency. Vince Young called them the dream team, and, you know, they ended up being terrible that year because nobody really had a lot of time to play with each other and grow as a team. And I think, you know, in a sport that's as coordinated and reliant on formations and knowing exactly where your guys are going to be because you practice so much and you know them so well, you know, that chemistry is important. And so you can't just bring in seven players in summer and expect it all just to fall into place.
Yeah, and a very important lesson learned, too, by that Eagles front office. Don't invest in Patriots players unless you've seen them successful somewhere else, too.
Facts only. Facts only.
So, speaking of investments and, I guess, team building, not just from the youth academy, I've got here a list of players, notable players, that were produced by Ajax and sold while van der Sar was still in his front office role as a marketing director. So not too involved in the football side of things, but definitely part of the front office. So some of those players, Jan Vertonghen, Toby Alderweireld, both now at Tottenham Hotspur. Christian Eriksen, also at Tottenham Hotspur. Daley Blind was sold to Manchester United. Jasper Cillessen, sold after the World Cup to Barcelona. And Arkadiusz Milik, sold to Napoli. So some pretty big cornerstones of the team sold off and massive profit made on all of them. Ajax did struggle in the league for a couple of years, hence them being in the Europa League that one year. But I think that makes it a little bit more, or even more impressive, that Ajax was able to build off of the, you know, the youth generation they have now with Onana, Davinson Sanchez, who was also sold eventually, but De Ligt, Frankie de Jong, Kasper Dolberg. And then also some of the transactions that van der Sar was able to pull off as chief executive, to bring in a veteran like Klaas-Jan Huntelaar for free, Dusan Tadic for basically nothing, Daley Blind cost them a little bit of money, but it's end up being worth it. He's the captain of the team and kind of the rock of their defense. And then CM De Jong back, a player that they had sold to Newcastle, bringing back on the cheap and has contributed to them now.
Yeah, and you're even seeing some other players like, I believe it's, David Neres. I'm never good with the Portuguese pronunciations because I always want to say Neres, but I'm sure that's probably incorrect. That's another player that's come in and he's really starting to produce right now on the right wing or in a forward position for them as well. Mm-hmm. So he's showing off like, hey, I'm not even just getting Dutch homegrown talent. I'm bringing in, you know, some up and coming international stars as well.
Yeah. And even some of the veterans, like, I don't think anybody would say Klaas-Jan Huntelaar is a great buy because he's probably near the end of his career. You think he's 37 or 38 now. But the fact that Edwin van der Sar is able to recognize the situation he's in, you know, he doesn't have a lot of money to spend. Most of the time, Ajax is selling players. But he's able to, you know, construct these transactions and find deals within the budget that help the club grow and help some of the younger players grow and learn as well. And that's something that we really have not seen from Ed Woodward since Sir Alex Ferguson retired, or even some of the later years of David Gill. It doesn't seem like we've been able to construct, you know, transfer market buys that, or hauls, I guess, multiple transfers in the same window that really contribute to building another squad is not something we've seen a lot of, especially when it comes to constructing big deals. Most of the time, clubs are holding out on us, and we're having to overpay for players that don't end up being that good.
Yeah, and something that's underrated about bringing in a guy like Huntelaar, too, you know, maybe he doesn't necessarily contribute what you'd be looking for from a 27-year-old forward in their prime, but what he's doing is he's bringing that calming presence, that experience into your dressing room that a team like Ajax, you know, really needs because they're so young. And it's something that United kind of did there for a half a second in that really incredible bit of business when they were able to bring in Zlatan Ibrahimovic on a free transfer. Mm-hmm. And there's I believe all reports now are saying that when Ibrahimovic left for Galaxy, it kind of left a bit of a power vacuum in the dressing room because Ibrahimovic walked in, one, because he was actually still producing for the club and he was hitting goals at a really nice clip, but he was the guy and people respected the fact that, hey, Zlatan's been there. He's wanted everywhere, Ajax included. And that's, you know, Rashford was responding to him. I believe Pogba was responding to him as well. So it's important to have that veteran presence, and that's something that United really hasn't looked into bringing on since they've, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic has left. Probably the most senior player that regularly plays for that team is either Ashley Young, who we're all screaming about because his play is not, you know, necessarily matching the level of potential leadership that he brings to the table. Or if you want to look at a more senior player too, you've got a guy like Nemanja Matic, who also at this point I think we can officially call washed. And he's only been with the team for 2 years. So, I mean, he can bring some presence to the team, but he doesn't quite have that same effect. And so having that mix of let's get a splashy talent, but let's also get a heady pick for our dressing room that's going to help be a calming factor, especially for a dressing room right now that seems to be rather volatile under Jose Mourinho. And now it seems like there might be some issues again with players needing reality checks, as Ollie said. Mm-hmm. So having a technical director that can spot that guy that comes in, you know, not just a $100 million player, but maybe you do get that $15 million veteran that can help stabilize things as well.
Yeah, and I think when people say, because this has been said so often since he left for Celtic, but the Roy Keane model of a player is something that Manchester United is lacking. I don't think they just mean as, you know, the bully leader in the locker room who's going to get you to play no matter what. I think they also mean, you know, a leader that has quality with them, because Roy Keane wasn't just a fantastic leader. He was an incredible midfielder as well. He was one of the best midfielders in Manchester United history. And, you know, Ashley Young may very well be a very good leader in the locker room, but he's not producing at the level that you would expect your best players to be at, especially if they're starting every week at Manchester United.
Yeah, and just having a vocal presence is important, but leading by example is really important too. In a game like today against Everton, Everton all of a sudden is looking like Barcelona, and it really caught United off guard, you could tell. And there wasn't one player that stepped up on the pitch and said, no, we're not going out like this. You know, follow me. I'll take us to the end of this game and we're going to finish it out right. There wasn't anybody on the field today that did that. Pogba was trotting back. Rashford had body language that looked almost as bad as Martial's. De Gea right now all of a sudden looks broken after two games, which is concerning. Bad week for De Gea to be asking for extra money. And then the defense is just a shambles. It's unbelievable that we have national team players on our defense and it looks that bad. I think that's more telling for England than anybody else, but still.
Maybe we should get Gareth Southgate to be our defensive coordinator because it's worked out well for him.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing, but
Well, he's got
Trippier is playing poorly for Tottenham this year, yet he was having just worldly moments every other day at the World Cup. So I don't know what's in the Gatorade that Southgate's handing out, but it's not getting, you know, going out in the domestic leagues right now.
Yeah, listeners of this podcast will know how fond I am of Harry Maguire and how much I'd like him to be at Manchester United. I think I've called him the English Vidic at one point. So.
Old Slabhead.
So I guess that topic actually leads in a little nicely to this next thing I have in my notes about Van der Sar's job as CEO of Ajax. And it's not just to, you know, the bargain players that he's brought in, but it's also his willingness to sell players when he needs to. And recognizing the advantage of moving someone to bring in other players or to use those funding to fund other projects that are worthwhile for the club and building a team that works for them. And clearly it has worked for them because they're in the semifinals of the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at Van der Sar, his role in the front office of Ajax is – anybody who's looking for United to continue returning to that Sir Alex cycle of doing business and, you know, conducting business, it's really important to point out that Edwin van der Sar, he didn't go into coaching right after he finished. He went in as the marketing director for Ajax, and he's worked his way up through that front office and was recently promoted to CEO of the team. And it just shows it's that same quality that you see out of an Ajax or you see out of, you know, an OG Manchester United. Hard work, you know, is just as important as talent. And it's hard work that gets you to the places that you need to be so that way you can be at the pinnacle of your position. And he's been able to do that at Ajax, you know, working all the way up to that CEO role. It follows that same path as Ollie getting promoted to a caretaker manager and, you know, managing his way to becoming the permanent manager. And so it's going to continue on that era of good feelings of harkening back to that Sir Alex era as well. But looking at it from a transfer perspective, and we saw it today, you know, front and center, there needs to be a ruthlessness now that hasn't, I don't think, been at the club. Mourinho was passive aggressive, but we didn't end up selling off any players either. They still are at the club. And Ollie's starting to hint at that, and a guy like Van der Sar, I think, would recognize that as well. Certainly the fans are recognizing it, hopefully now, as Ollie's still getting a standing ovation at Goodison Park by the supporters. But everybody knows that right now the quality play on the pitch is terrible, and as many players as they need to bring in, there needs to be that many players going out. There's a level of addition by subtraction that needs to happen at the club, and a guy like Van der Sar is able to recognize that.
Yeah, and there's been a real lack of willingness, I think, on Ed Woodward's part to follow through on that, because it seems he's kind of made up for the lack of footballing knowledge on his own part by trusting whatever the manager has requested of him. You know, he spent a lot of the summer of 2013 kind of trying to work out the transfers David Moyes had requested. None of them worked out because he was a rookie in the role. I think the Gareth Bale rumors may have been real or not, but he was always going to choose Real Madrid in that situation. And he ends up bringing in Marouane Fellaini and Juan Mata and arguably overpaying for both of them. And then with Louis van Gaal, I think the transfers definitely match the persona or the personality that Louis van Gaal was bringing and the kind of tactical analysis of the game that he has and what he was wanting to see on the pitch, the very Dutch style of football. And then again in Jose Mourinho, it seemed like Jose Mourinho, for the first two transfer windows at least, got every player he wanted to. And maybe that's not the best approach as a chief executive, but when you're someone like Ed Woodward, who's only ever been a businessman, he may not have it may not cross his mind to question some of the transfer lists that he's been handed and, you know, look at the future of the club, not just what the manager wants in that one season. You know, make moves that are for the best, in the best interest of the club for the long term.
Yeah, and that lack of ruthlessness that we're seeing, too, about offloading players that aren't performing, you know, it's really created this culture of appeasement. I don't think it would be far off to refer to Edward Woodward right now as almost like Neville Chamberlain-esque. I mean, the players are not scared right now. They can sit there and put out a bad performance and like, oh, well, I'm not getting sold. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to make $200,000, $300,000 a week. and that's no thing. I'm playing for Manchester United. I might not represent him, but I'm still going to get paid by him without worry of having that check go away. And Woodward, to a certain degree, is probably gun shy to get rid of players because, especially players that he's personally bringing in, if he's getting rid of them within 1-2 years, then it looks bad for him because it's like, oh, that player that you brought in didn't work out. What are you doing wrong?
I think we kind of saw that with Di Maria, especially with, you know, in and out in a year. And then now he's, you know, playing every week at PSG and doing really well and winning league titles.
Yeah, and so and with that situation, that was bringing in a player that just it didn't quite fit. You know, tactically, it wasn't going to work out. They did, you know, manage to get him out, but they haven't done that with other players. And we're seeing again this year, Fred is sort of working out right now. He has some moments here and there. Certainly, $50 million was overpaying for him. And yeah. It's almost like we're paying an Ed Woodward tax because teams know that they can one-up this guy because he's more experienced at selling, you know, the commercial part of the team as opposed to actually getting the team built. And so allowing him to just check his ego at the door, write the checks, and appoint a guy that he feels confident can actually make the proper football decisions is incredibly important, and it's something that at this point, and Gary Neville and other pundits are saying, the foundation's crumbled, and until we fix the foundation, it doesn't matter what manager's in there, it's still going to be a problem. It's just like what you'd see in the NFL with guys like Al Davis, who thought they were smarter than everybody else, Jerry Jones, and so they're just kind of hanging out in squalor. Because instead of checking their ego and bringing in a person that can make the decisions, they still think they're the smartest person in the room, and so the club suffers because of it.
Yeah, I think it was the United Rant that tweeted, "A fish rots from the head down," or something like that. It was a picture of the Glazers and Ed Woodward. A lot of the frustration, I think, from fans is directed at them now. And yeah, I think some of the recent discussion of Jose Mourinho's comments is a little bit of a revisionism of Mourinho's history at Manchester United, because let's be clear, he was absolutely unbearable by the time he left. But there is a truth in it that he was not the only problem. And we're seeing that he was not the only problem. We're seeing that there's problems in the squads, but particularly there's problems with the board that brought those players into the squad and let them stay there for 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, and I do believe there's a reality somewhere, some alternative reality, where Mourinho is in fact successful at United. The problem was he was being appeased, and then he wasn't managing these new players that were coming in. Instead, it was all about just making, like, let's make sure Paul Pogba's happy instead of someone just coming in and telling Paul, like, hey, this is how it is. And so everything got soured. And it got to the point where Mourinho had to go. It didn't matter whether or not it was possible in another transfer window he could rebuild the ship. It didn't matter. Like, he just had to go. And so in looking at that fish rotting from the head down scheme, the Glazers, not really known for a lot of success either in their other ventures. I mean, if for you guys who do pay attention to the NFL, I don't remember the Tampa Bay Buccaneers being relatively successful in recent years. And it's kind of a weird parallel with United right now, too.
Yeah, but I can't remember when the Glazers actually bought the Buccaneers. I don't know if they were the owners when they won the Super Bowl in 2003, but it definitely seems ever since that Super Bowl, it's been a steady decline.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those things where it's almost kind of a funny parallel. Yeah, Tony Dungy didn't win the Super Bowl with the Buccaneers, but John Gruden won like a year later with Tony Dungy's team.
Yeah.
And so it's like the moment the better coach left, the thing just goes to shambles. And so, hey, Alex Ferguson left, and now all of a sudden it's a real issue because they just haven't been able to get that successor right. Right here it says the Glazers bought the Bucks in 1995.
Okay.
So they've got one Super Bowl championship and not a whole lot of wins other than that.
And several L's given to them by Drew Brees.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So I guess moving on a little bit from Vanderzaar from the technical perspective. Oh, by the way, I wanted to add, his front office partner, somebody who's listed as the technical director, and I think they're kind of working as partners in building Ajax. Mark Overmars, famously of Arsenal and also Ajax, the Ajax team that won the Champions League, has been a front office partner with Edwin Vanderzaar for the last few years. So maybe we could bring him over as well as his VP or whatever.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that. Also sticking it to Arsenal a little bit because I'm sure it would benefit us greatly. And so then they would have to watch another Dutch person come over to United and be infinitely successful, just like RVP.
Oh, Robin van Persie. All right, so moving on a little bit from the work that he's done at Ajax and to his history at Manchester United. I think it's a little bit important to discuss Vanderzaar's personal history at Manchester United in the context of him knowing the club. So he came in at a time, it was the beginning of the 2005-2006 season, where United were kind of starting the rebuild of Sir Alex Ferguson's second generation of what would eventually be one of the great sides that he managed. But at the time, it definitely did not seem that way. And he ended up winning 4 Premier League titles, 3 League Cups, and the UEFA Champions League. So, being that veteran mind that had won before, you know, having some years at Fulham and then coming back into a big club, it was not something that intimidated Edwin Vanderzaar, and I think that's really important when looking at this situation of him moving from Ajax to Manchester United, potentially in a front office role as well.
Well, and another little interesting caveat in all of that was what we can only assume is he turned down United twice before finally choosing them, because United were very interested in bringing in Van der Sar right before he went to Juventus. And then in what's always called a shock move, he left Juventus and went to Fulham, of all places, who had just been promoted, as opposed to once again going to Manchester United. And it was a period of time where Manchester United was just dying to find the successor to Schmeichel, and they couldn't. And then it was finally when he came in 2005, all of a sudden, boom, the goalkeeper situation that had been a little bit of a quagmire was fixed, and all of a sudden they started ripping off titles again.
Yeah, also brought in that season where Nemanja Vidic and Patrice Evra brought in January of 2006. So they ended that season on a pretty good run but couldn't catch up to Chelsea, and then the next season just dominated. I think from start to finish they were top of the table.
Yeah, and then looking at not just team accomplishments of European titles, domestic titles with Manchester United, Edwin van der Sar as an individual set the Premier League record for minutes without conceding a goal, which I believe has still not been broken. Mm-hmm. Certainly right now, David De Gea is not on his way to breaking that record. And speaking of which, that might be a nice little aside where if Edwin van der Sar comes in, maybe him and David can have a chat or two about some goalkeeping things and get his mind back.
Yeah, put his arm around him and say, hey, listen up, it's not your fault. Or give him the it's not your fault speech. And, you know, get him refocused. I think it's safe to say ever since the World Cup mishap, David Ea has been a little bit off of it.
Yeah, for sure. And certainly he hasn't been helped by his defense, though, because the game like Tottenham that proves, oh, yeah, DDG is, you know, a top three goalkeeper, if not the best. Mm-hmm. He's certainly not being helped right now by the guys in front of him. But to a certain degree, too, there's been some really bad goals that he's let in recently, and so I think he just needs to clear his mind and have a good off season. I think he can turn things around.
Yeah, and I think this summer is really important for that purpose of recalibrating, learning, having an entire preseason and transfer window under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, where he gets to set the agenda and, you know, build his team the way he wants to and prepare them for the season with the fitness training that he wants to, because it's also pretty clear that United's players are not at the same energy levels as they were when Ole first came in.
Yeah, no question. And all of a sudden, you've got all these people who do want to do the revisionist history, and you've got people who are already saying, oh, what were they doing thinking about promoting Ole like they did? the streak that Ollie had still happened, guys, and we all still wanted him to be the manager. It's just that you did promote him halfway through a season after they had an entire offseason of training for Mourinho-style football. And as I've written, as others for the Busby Babe have written, the ghost of Jose Mourinho is still haunting this club, and that's going to happen at least through, you know, the beginning of the summer when they can finally start fresh with Ollie at the helm and with whatever players they decide they want to put in this starting 18 or the starting 11 and the 18 overall.
Yeah, and I think a great way to kind of shed that this past season, which overall has just been this past season has felt like it's taken forever to finish, and it's not been easy, especially, you know, as us following Manchester United so closely as fans, but also semi-professionally writing and podcasting about them as well. Resetting in this summer, I think something that could definitely shed the ghost of Jose Mourinho is making a splash in the transfer market, you know, bringing in the 5-6 players that Ollie wants to fill the holes in that he sees in this squad. What I've got down is our biggest weaknesses are all across the back line, except for maybe left back, an anchor midfielder, a box-to-box midfielder, and a right winger. That seems to be the general trend of what United fans see as our biggest weaknesses right now. I was wondering what you had to add on that.
As far as transfers, for the most part, I think Lindelof might be a guy that will play for us for a long time at central defense. Mm-hmm. And so what he needs is he needs a partner. I'm sure everyone is hoping, and it's been reported that that's what Solskjaer is looking at too, bringing in that Virgil van Dijk signing. And all of a sudden the defense is just magically fixed, because that's what you were missing, was just that one partner for your already established defender to come in and fix the back line. Mm-hmm. So whoever that may be, we've all written our transfer wish list. I went a little bit more practically and looked at guys that we could buy out of their contracts, like a Kostas Manolas or maybe even Toby Alderweireld as a stopgap guy. Until we develop whoever we want, or we buy the next great thing. Or, you know, if we want to splash some cash and spend center forward money on Kalidou Koulibaly, you're not going to hear a peep out of me, because at the end of the day, that's just what the market is. And if you want the best, you got to pay for the best. So if we go get a transformational player like that, it's something that needs to happen, because I'd just baffled by what's happening in the central defense right now. We're starting people in our defense that I don't think would start for other teams in the top 10 of the Premier League. Like a Fulham might be really happy to have Phil Jones, but he's not starting over anybody else in, say, Everton or Watford right now. Right back is something that needs to be addressed as well. We've seen Ollie try and make up for the current vacuum of talent that Ashley Young is providing on the right side by playing Diego Dalo sometimes at right wing. So then he's putting two right backs on the right side to kind of, you know, two to play one position, which isn't the best thing in the world to happen. If we just solidify that position, we don't have to then dedicate an attacker towards defending as much, which was a problem that we were running into when Mourinho was the coach, because he wanted guys to track back. He wanted his wingers to play more defensively and not play in an advanced role where we could then, you know, get them on the counterattack. With Herrera leaving, I think another box-to-box midfielder is incredibly important. And as we're seeing right now with Matic, that a holding midfielder is and we need that as well, desperately. Someone who can anchor that midfield, drop down and play almost as a central defender in the attack, where all of a sudden it morphs from, you know, whatever four-man back line to a three-man back line in the attack. Someone that's going to take the weight off of Pogba's shoulders, because at this point, I don't even necessarily feel like he's the best box-to-box midfielder. I think he just needs to play as a more advanced attacking midfielder, let him be able to create. He doesn't need to be going 30 yards past the midfield line on defense. We should just have other midfielders to take care of that, so that way he can create up front where when Solskjaer's run first started, that's what Paul Pogba was doing, and everything was creative. He was setting other players up. His assists, his goals just started skyrocketing, and he just looked like he was more comfortable playing in that role too. And then obviously something on the right wing. Unfortunately, Juan Mata is lost his legs. Not really known to be the speediest player to begin with, but he was very creative. But now age has kind of caught up to him. Lingard sometimes plays on the right side, or we're playing Rashford. Right now, there's just too many cooks in the kitchen at the position. We just need to solidify, hey, this is our right winger. This is going to be the guy. Whether it's Jadon Sancho or whomever, I'll be excited to see who they bring in. Gareth Bale sounds like a huge mistake if that were to happen. I know sometimes that rumor gets thrown around every couple weeks. Between injuries and what we're seeing with Alexis and wages, Gareth Bale would be, I think, a huge mistake.
Especially with what Real Madrid would be demanding if we were to go after him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's insane. The amount of money that Real Madrid probably would expect for us to get Gareth Bale, let's just do what Brent said and get Kylian Mbappe's right foot. Because I think that would be infinitely more useful than Gareth Bale.
Yeah, we could give his right foot to someone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Manchester United has the technology. They could probably figure out how to surgically implant it.
I think that would be useful, even if we got to put it, maybe we'll give Alexis Mbappe's right foot and then see if maybe that will make his $450,000 a week worth it.
It'll make him 50% faster, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Leading into our final topic a little bit, and this was a question I sent you kind of late, but I feel like this is probably the most important discussion in terms of this being a real possibility. Do you think that Edwin van der Sar would take this Manchester United job of director of football if it was offered to him? And do you also, in that same breath, do you think that Ed Woodward would be willing to get that director of football finally this summer?
I think if van der Sar were to have Manchester United come calling, I think he would take it. He's got that history. The only reason why I would think he wouldn't is maybe he does feel like there's some unfinished business with Ajax. I think maybe the best thing that could happen for Manchester United is if Ajax goes ahead and wins the Eredivisie and pulls off the ultimate upset and wins the Champions League this year. Because all of a sudden then he can be, you know, the conquering hero that goes off into the, you know, off into the sunset where it's like, hey, I've delivered you the league title again after a couple years of struggling against other teams like Feyenoord, who have recently won.
Robin van Persie again.
Yeah, and then giving them the Champions League, something that they've so desperately craved after kind of falling by the wayside a little bit to the other European powers. Ajax is kind of that forgotten European power, and now they're really starting to reassert themselves as Dutch football is making a resurgence again. So certainly if Ajax were to take the cake, I could see van der Sar definitely taking an offer to go to Manchester United. It would give him that opportunity to rebuild again a club that he was very successful at and won a lot of things at, and that would add to his legacy. And I think he probably looks upon his time at United very fondly and would love a chance to help Ollie you know, recreate Manchester United in that same vein that it used to have. What I'm less hopeful, or, you know, I'm not necessarily as thinking that we're going to see is Ed Woodward potentially giving up the reins. I think ego is an issue. Thus why we had that kind of temper tantrum situation going on this past summer with Mourinho trying to get his players and not really getting any of the signings he wanted. I think it was almost a cold war that was going on in the offices where Ed Woodward and Mourinho are having a stare down over players and budgets and how much they were going to spend and who would actually be helpful for fixing the team. God knows how many defenders we were linked with last year and nobody came in. It seemed like we were minutes away from a Harry Maguire signing or a Toby Alderweireld signing for the better part of 2.5 months, and it never happened. So it seems like ego is probably going to be an issue with Ed Woodward, and whether or not he's willing to give that up, I'm not as hopeful on. I would love to see it happen. He's obviously made United a ton of money commercially. I don't want to see him go away, but I don't think he should have any kind of hands in the football, what's actually going on in the pitch anymore. So it's really going to be on him, or if the Glazers finally start paying attention to what's happening and saying, you know what, this does need to change, we've got to bring in somebody else. So I don't think Woodward would get necessarily bring somebody on. I think someone higher than Woodward is going to have to make that change.
Yeah, I've got down here about how Woodward has made such a how he's performed well in his role as a chief executive on the financial side of things, because despite Manchester United's endless troubles in the previous years, you know, the past 5 to 6 years, the club's value has actually gone up, and we've remained one of the most valuable sporting franchises in the world. But there's a huge, huge problem of when it's in the case of actually playing football, he doesn't always provide the best tools, whether that's players or managers, that Manchester United needs to succeed. I also think that that's the biggest roadblock in getting Edwin van der Sar possibly, or anyone else as a director of football. But I do think, as you said, the pressure is mounting. This season in particular, more than any other season, there's been so much conversation on Twitter or online or in our comments threads on the Busby Babe about how the biggest problem is the front office and the board and the owners, and how they're not paying enough attention to getting footballing minds amongst them as peers to improve the club, rather than just going through managers and players over and over again.
Yeah, and right now it really has been Manchester United's being run like a business, and that's why every year on the Forbes list, they're top of the charts or right in line with Real Madrid and Barcelona. The difference is Real Madrid has a boatload of Champions League titles that they've recently just ripped off. Mm-hmm. So even though they haven't necessarily had the success in Spain that they've been looking for, they've still been incredibly successful in Europe. And then obviously Barcelona is Barcelona. Spanish football is always going to be king, and those two teams are, you know, the kings of Spanish football. And Manchester United right now, it almost feels like they're white knuckling, you know, their grip on the position of being the top dog in England, because certainly right now what's happening in play is not reflecting how much money they're doing. And what's unfortunate is we're in this weird period where we could turn things around, but if we don't do it quickly, all of a sudden Manchester United is going to lose its positioning in the world, as we've got more and more kids internationally that are growing up Manchester City fans and Liverpool fans because they love the way those teams play. They like watching Mo Salah score bangers in the upper 90 like he did last week, and they like watching the free-flowing play of Manchester City, and certainly they don't have maybe the same insights as to some of the geopolitical problems of a Manchester City. They just like how they play. And so, and they're looking at Manchester United like, why would I want to watch this team play? It's kind of ugly football, or I don't like, you know, how some of these players play. I don't like these players. They're not, you know, interesting to me. And so right now we're kind of in this weird place where United could fix it, or they could really fall by the wayside, in the same way that kind of Arsenal has done that, where Arsenal was the team of the early 2000s and things with Wenger got stale. And I know a lot of really good friends from college. They're all Arsenal fans. And the reason why they're Arsenal fans is because of the Invincibles and Thierry Henry and everybody who I've ever – some of the soccer players I used to interview when I was a media contact for a college, their favorite team was Arsenal because they grew up watching Thierry Henry. And right now we don't really have that, where, you know, the kids that might be soccer players 10 years from now in college or professionally, they're not going to say, oh, yeah, I really liked that 2017 Manchester United team. I just love the way they packed it in for a 1-0 win against Bournemouth, you know. So we got to start winning the hearts and mind campaign. Otherwise, the commercial success isn't, you know, what was the point of it?
Yeah, and I think we're both in agreement that Edwin van der Sar could, you know, be a potential answer to that. One of the reasons I had this idea to do a podcast episode on this topic was our Twitter exchange after IX. I think it was the second leg when they beat Real Madrid. We had that, you know, nostalgic moment where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the current manager, knocked in the winner in the 99 Champions League final. And I put it next to an image of Van der Sar getting the key save in the penalty shootout in the 2008 Champions League final.
Yeah, and it's really an opportunity for a lot of things to come full circle. And I'm getting an extra dose of it being based in Virginia, so I'm regularly driving up to D.C. and I'm seeing Wayne Rooney play, and I'm having my nostalgic moment because I had purchased on the internet a Wayne Rooney jersey, I believe from the 2013-14 season, and so it's got the Premier League champions patch on it and everything, and I got to wear it, you know, nice and proudly while they played Atlanta United. I did, and it was unfortunate I saw Rooney miss a sitter that game, but I'll blame it on the weather. It was really terrible. But, yeah, it's one of those things where we're constantly being reminded of the past, and it's a great way for the past to come full circle and build the future. And so I think Edwin van der Sar is a great candidate to help do that, especially since he's already got experience in the role and he's having success in the role.
All right. Well, that's about all time we have. I want to thank Nathan again for joining me. Nathan, this has been great.
Yeah, pleasure as always, Colin. Love doing the pod for the Busby Babe.
Yeah. Be sure to check out the Busby Babe for all of your Manchester United needs. There will be some downers coming out over the next couple of days, but hopefully United can get back in the top four race. They've got Manchester City midweek and then Chelsea 3 days later on the following Sunday. And surprisingly, still in the top four race because Chelsea, who had a game in hand, are only a couple points ahead of us now. And Tottenham and Arsenal both lost this weekend as well. So despite how bad they were against Everton, we're still in it.
Yeah, that's the only thing keeping me from throwing my phone through the window. when I got that notification that they blew it at home, it was like, all right, I don't know how we continue to stay in this thing, but we still got a chance, guys. You just got to believe.
Yeah. And believe we shall. I'm Colin, and this has been Nathan. Thanks for joining us again.